Okay, I would like to thank you for inviting me to give here a talk. I'm going to talk about a problem which comes up in studying standard model, namely to QCD action, we could add a CP violating interaction, which is of this form. It's a coefficient times a trace of FHF, which is the instanton density. When integrated over the space, this is an integer with appropriate boundary conditions at infinity. Or in general, it is determined by the boundary conditions at infinity modulo an integer, which means that this coefficient theta is an angular variable with a period 2 pi. The experimentally, theta has some experimental consequences. In particular, this CP violating interaction contributes to electric dipole moments of, for example, mercury and neutron, and it has been found that from the absence, the current limits on the electric dipole moments of these particles, the theta must be smaller than about 10 to minus 10, which is about 10 orders of magnitude smaller than the natural value of theta. So one explanation for this brings immediately to mind that maybe when theta is zero, CP symmetry would be restored, and that would explain why the small value of theta. However, this does not really go through in standard model because we know that peak interactions already do violate the CP symmetry at a large level. So there is no restoration of CP symmetry when we set theta equals to zero. Explaining the extreme smallness of this parameter is then is called the strong CP problem. And in the literature, there have been several proposals for solving this problem. The three main ones are listed here. I will go over them more detailedly in the following transparencies. The first one assumes that the mass of the up quark is zero. The second one is the one on which I'm going to concentrate mostly in this talk, is that one postulates that there is a light particle called axion, and this particle makes theta dynamical and allows it to relax to the value theta equals zero. Then there is a third class of solutions in which one assumes that the fundamental underlying theory conserves CP, which is then spontaneously violated in such a way that theta is equal to zero. So firstly, let's look at the M up equals zero solution to strong CP problem. When the up quark or any of the other quarks are massless, then we can use the chirosymmetry rotating the phase of left and right quark differently to set theta equals zero. So in this case, as it has been noticed a long time ago, when some of the quarks are massless, theta does not have physical effects. So in particular, there are no physical effects from theta coming into electric dipole moments and so on. So the strong CP problem goes away. This, however, seems to be at odds with current algebra results, which matches the masses of quarks to the masses of low-lying mesons. And an old result due to Weinberg says that the ratio of the up and down quark at low energy is about 1 to 1.8. So it seems to imply that the mass of the up quark is zero, is non-zero. However, there is a possible way how to resolve this apparent puzzle, namely by noticing that the up quark, the mass of the up quark has the same quantum numbers as the product of the mass of the down and strange quark, since the product of 3 and 3, representation of SU3 is 3 bar. So it could be possible that M up would be generated by strong QCD dynamics. And indeed, there is a possible diagram one could draw which would generate M up this way, namely via one instanton contribution of the following type. one would get an additive contribution to the up quark mass. And its value is roughly given by the estimate there. To really determine whether this is the origin of the quark mass, one needs to resort to a numerical computation on a lattice. And recent results by Milt's collaboration seem to disfavor MAP equals zero. What they do, they take some bare values for the quark masses and evaluate the masses of the and different parameters of the low energy, higher Lagrangian, and by matching to the parameters, they find that MAP equals zero is very unlikely.
So, how much does it disfavor quantitatively?
Well, what they find is the bare mass at I think 2 GeV was that MAP was the most likely value was maybe not like 3 times smaller than the M down. So so the answer was I think 1.7 MeV plus a sigma was a few on the second digit. So it was strongly disfavoring this solution. Of course, with more precise simulations in the future, this could still change. But yeah. The second possibility was that I listed it as a third before, but anyway, the second possibility is that the underlying fundamental theory at high energy preserves CP symmetry. In that case, the bare value of theta angle is set to zero, and the CP symmetry is then assumed to be broken spontaneously, which would generate complex phases in the quark mass matrix which are necessary in order to account for the CKM matrix. However, this is slightly tricky because the theta angle receives contribution from the determinant of the quark mass matrix. So really, the physical theta which we measure is the bare theta plus the phase of the determinant of the quark matrix. So one has to break the CP symmetry in such a way that capital M is complex.
Can you imagine
a yes, I. There's a typo. One has to break CP symmetry spontaneously in such a way that the quark matrix M is quark mass matrix is complex, but its determinant is real and positive. This has been done in the literature in a technically mature way. The first models were by N. Nelson and Steve Barr, and then recently this has been revisited by Hiller and Schmaltz, who found the supersymmetric version of this mechanism. In this talk, we will concentrate on the search solution to strong CP problem, which is axions. To introduce axions, Peche and Quinn, how one starts, is one postulates that there is a global U1 symmetry under which some quarks are charged, and this symmetry is assumed to have a QCD anomaly. There are two possibilities. In one case, the symmetry is either broken or unbroken. If it is unbroken, then some of the quarks must be massless. So it would lead back to the MAP equals zero solution of the strong CP problem. If it is, and we are back to the solution number one. If it is broken, then the pseudo-Gaussian boson of this breaking is the Peche-Quinn axion. Peche-Quinn axion is a light scalar which has a symmetry coming from the U1 symmetry, which shifts it by an arbitrary constant. This symmetry is, however, broken by QCD instantons because of the anomaly. The coupling to QCD instanton density is here. When we normalize the axion, as I will in most of the talk, to have period 2 pi, just like the QCD theta angle, then the action can be schematically written in the following form. There is a kinetic term with a non-standard normalization, and the coupling to QCD instanton density, with R being some integer which is assumed to be non-zero. And indeed, in all of the string models, we find that R is integer. FA is so-called axion decay constant or the axion coupling parameter. It is very similar to the pion decay constant you learned about in your quantum field theory classes. So in particular, all the couplings of axions to matter go are proportional to 1 over FA. Indeed, if we rescale axions to achieve a canonical normalization of the kinetic term as this, we find that in particular the coupling of the axion to two gluons is proportional to the inverse axion coupling parameter. This axion coupling to QCD instanton number, the QCD theta angle becomes dynamical. If you notice, this interaction here has exactly the same form as the CP violating term, which one can add to the QCD action. So in fact, in practice, one can consider the theta angle to be dynamical, and the physical theta angle is the sum of the bare and contribution from other physics plus R times the value of axion field. The reason why introducing axion actually solves strong CP problem is because it gets a non-trivial potential with height which can be estimated from current algebra to be m pi squared times f pi squared from QCD instantons. This potential has minimum at theta equals zero, as can be shown in a very nice and short argument due to Waffa and Witten. So one imagines that the strong CP problem solves as follows. At some initial time at the early universe, axion is sitting and the QCD theta angle is at some random value, and then as the universe evolves, it slowly relaxes to the CP conserving value at theta equals zero, and thereby solving the strong CP problem. There are some... So now we can move on to the main question of my talk, which is studying the value of this coupling parameter. There are some bounds on it. The first bounds came from... it's a mass of the pion squared times the axion coupling. Yes, I mean the pion. It's the pion. So it's roughly of the order of lambda QCD to the fourth power, which is what you would expect. Since the potential is nothing else than the theta dependence, the vacuum dependence, the theta dependence of the vacuum energy. So if in current algebra you compute the theta dependence of the vacuum energy to get the axion potential, all you do is substitute for theta this parameter, and that's the potential for the axion.
How come weak sector does not spoil this?
Weak sector does contribute to the potential at a negligible value, much smaller than the 10 to minus 10 level. It has a very small contribution to the potential for the angle, because this is the theta angle for QCD, not for weak interactions. And the theta angle for weak interaction is not so important because weak interactions aren't as strongly coupled as strong interactions at low energy. So people usually discuss just the strong, the theta angle of the strong interactions. So the axion rolls down to theta equals zero and solves the strong CP problem. There are some bounds on the coupling parameter, which, and one can obtain them. Well, there is one set of bounds which gives a lower limit on the coupling parameter, because the coupling of axion to matter is proportional to the inverse of FA. So if the coupling parameter is too small, axion couples too strongly to matter, and too many axions are produced in various astrophysical processes. In particular, the red giants would cool too quickly, and these bounds altogether can be summarized by saying that the axion decay constant should be larger than about 10 to 9 GeV. There is cosmological considerations put, on the other hand, an upper bound on the axion coupling parameter. The reasoning goes as follows. The minimum of the axion potential depends on the various low energy data, for example, the phases of the fermion masses, and are assumed to be unimportant in the early universe. So, yes?
So, you're assuming it would be much more natural to think that there are several scalar
fields. Yes. And that's the one I concentrate on. Well, what I am assuming is that its main contribution to mass, and indeed to its potential, comes from QCD. Then its mass is determined by the... So the dominant interaction of axion...
I'm thinking of under the constraint.
Yes. Okay.
So my question really is,
well,
if it were in the mass,
The mass of the axion comes, I'm assuming, comes purely from QCD effects. So you just take the linear, because there are various contributions to the mass, which comes from different instantons which violate the Petrie-Quine symmetry. Because if the Petrie-Quine symmetry is exact, then all the axions are massless. So essentially the question is, what are the different violations of Petrie-Quine symmetry? Yes. Yes.
So, which is more important,
the QCD effect? Well, the QCD effect has to be at least 10 to 10 times more important than the effects from the other moduli, because generally we would assume that the minimum of the potential for these other axions is uncorrelated with the minimum at theta equals zero. So this additional contribution to the potential would favor the axion to roll down to a minimum which is away from the CP conserving value. So indeed, a strong constraint on this model, as I will discuss, is that the additional contribution to the mass of the axion, of this QCD axion on which I concentrate, are much smaller than the contribution coming from QCD effects. Because otherwise they would displace the vacuum of the axion away from QCD theta equals zero. You know, you can think of a mass term as a 1/2 m a minus pi squared.
Do you envision that in deriving that down, do you use that you have a mass size?
What one is using is that the coupling, not really. What is necessary is that the coupling. Even if those, well, what is important is that the coupling is the strength of the coupling of the axion to the matter. It goes like 1/(the inverse, 1/(the coupling constant. So whether it's a mass eigenstate or not, it will just quickly leave. Once it is produced, it will quickly radiate out of the star because its coupling are so weak.
But you're assuming that before you worry about the QCD effect, you have an essentially massless field, possibly
yes.
More than one.
So otherwise,
your combination of which couples to FF2.
Yes.
And maybe you're going to show us why we should think that it's going to happen. But right now, you're just assuming.
I'm assuming it because otherwise the axion would not solve the strong CP problem. And the main motivation for the axion hypothesis is that, well, it is the solution to strong CP problem. As Greg points out, in string theory there are many other axions, but at the moment I'm assuming that there is one of them for which has the potential to solve the strong CP problem. And for that one, it's going to be true that it's essentially a mass eigenstate. You know. So, as I will discuss in the second half of the talk, there is some tension between the cosmological bound and the prediction for the coupling parameter coming from string theory. So, I'd like to discuss in detail how these cosmological considerations constrain the coupling parameter. So axion starts at some random value of its potential because the minimum is determined by such details as the phases of the fermion masses, which are presumably unimportant in the early universe. So one would expect that it starts at some random value, and then as the universe is expanding, it's still sitting there up to the time when the axion mass is comparable to the Hubble scale. Once that is reached, the axion will start oscillating, and its energy density, or its density, will decrease as 1 over AP, where A is a linear, well, distance of the universe. For the coupling parameter greater than about 10 to 12 GeV, the axion mass, which is inversely proportional to the coupling parameter, is going to be too small, and the axion would start to oscillate too late, and it wouldn't have enough time to dilute its density. So in particular, it would give too much contribution to the dark matter density, larger than is observed in the universe. So that's where the bound comes from.
Actually, since you're going to tell us about some tensions, isn't it reasonable at this point to hold on and try to consider seriously the possibility when misalignment angle is small? I think the formula is that if you have misalignment angle, something like 10 to the minus 2, it gives you several orders of magnitude for the impact on the J constant, and if you go close enough to the gas flow, something like that.
Yes, this is indeed a good question. That there could be a possibility that the misalignment angle is very small at the beginning, which would relax the bound on the axion coupling parameter, because the axion would have to roll a smaller distance towards the minimum. However, this has been recently, by the way, this question has been revisited recently by Scott Thomas and his collaborators, and their conclusion is that, one has to also take into account the fact that right after inflation, the axion is going to have some fluctuations coming from the inflation. So if you assume some standard scenario in cosmology, the axion would get fluctuations at the order of 10 to minus 5. And for axions, so that will, for axions which ordinarily come out from string theory, this is already a fairly large value for the initial misalignment angle, that it puts some, that there is some tension. So I believe they were able to raise up the bound to about 10 to 15 GeV. Yeah, it's close to gut scale. So there is a possibility. So this gives the possibility for an explanation, which this is essentially an anthropic explanation of the strong CP problem, where you assume that for some reason, for example, because it's good for us, the axion starts at a very small, very close to its minimum in the early universe, and then keeps rolling down. Of course,
the very close doesn't mean like it's 10 to the minus 10. It could mean 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3. Something.
It means more like 10 to minus 5 for axions with coupling parameter about string, about gut scale. It's more like 10 to minus 2 for axions which are closer to here.
But still not too bad. I mean, we have lots of 10 to the minus 5 in these power coupling.
Yes, yeah, so we are trading 10 to minus 5, 10 to minus 10 for 10 to minus 5.
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends on your preference. But do you agree that it's still fine-tuning? Okay, so the cosmological reasoning leads to, I will actually discuss in a later transparency, maybe I should discuss it now, all the different possibilities which people have thought about how to evade this bound. So one of the explanation how to evade this bound is the one we just discussed, which is essentially fine-tuning or anthropic explanation. Another proposal for evading this bound was assuming that at a later stage in the evolution of the universe, there will be a lot of entropy production due to decay of particles, which would dilute the density of the axions. And then there are these two proposals are sort of related. They assume that in the early universe, the properties of, for example, of QCD were different than from what they are right now. So for example, there is a proposal due to Dvalli, who tried to arrange for a scenario of the cosmic evolution in which QCD at the early times was more strongly coupled, which would mean, so for example, you could assume that, imagine that the QCD coupling is determined by some scalar who was displaced from its minimum at the early universe. So, and in that case, QCD would be strongly, more strongly coupled at that time, and axion would could roll down more quickly to the minimum. Another possibility is of low-scale inflation, where you could, or just in general, trying to arrange for some effects which would turn on the potential for axions at the early times, which would make it roll down earlier. Because, indeed there are several different ways how people try to evade the bound right after it has been noticed that the string theory predicts several orders of magnitude larger coupling parameter. And it would be very interesting to actually go and find the axion and measure its decay constant and see whether it satisfies the bound or whether it does not.
Where does Sergei's misalignment?
So one can imagine. So for imagine that at the early universe, the theta equals zero minimum is the same, is aligned with the present, yes? Because the CP preserving value of theta could have been different at the early universe. But if you assume that it's the same as it is at the present moment, if, for example, QCD was more strongly coupled, or if the instantons, additional instantons which give potential to axion were also aligned, they could have generated a potential at the early universe which would make the axion roll down to its minimum earlier. Because in the standard picture of cosmic evolution, the potential for axion turns on roughly only when the temperature of the universe goes down to about 200 MeV to QCD transition. So it's at a fairly late stage in the universe evolution that axion gets potential and has the option to start rolling down. Yeah. So, yeah. So, as I already said before, there is, in, for example, in the early days of string theory, people noted that at the time the only semi-realistic model of particle physics from string theory, the weakly coupled heterotic string theory, leads to axions with a coupling parameter a few orders larger, let's say from 10 to 16 to 10 to 18 GeV, than the standard cosmological bound. In a forthcoming paper with Edward Witten, we revisit the question to what extent string theory compactifications can lead to values of the coupling parameter which is compatible with the cosmological bounds. The way we approach this problem, we compute the coupling parameter in a wide range of models in order to get an overall picture. We find that indeed in many models, for example, which include most of the gut-like models and also disk brain models, the axion coupling parameter is somewhere in the range from 10 to 16 to 10 to 18 GeV, which does not change the conclusion from the early days of string theory. We also point out some models, both old and new ones, in which axions do satisfy the cosmological bound. So let's first review the situation in weakly coupled E8 cos E8 heterotic string theory. There are two axioms. One of them, conventionally called the model independent axiom, comes from a NS-NSB field, which is polarized along the four non-compact dimensions. Two-form polarized in four dimensions is dual to a compact or to a periodic scalar, and like this, by a Hodge duality. And if we look at the terms in the supergravity effective action for the kinetic term of the B field, to which there is an added Chern-Simons term, this, after performing a duality, will give rise to a kinetic term for the axion plus this cross term between the Chern-Simons and the B field, give rise to a coupling of the axion to the instanton density. After putting in the numbers, one finds that the axion has decay constant, assuming that the QCD coupling runs as it runs at the low energy up to a high scale. The answer comes out to be 1.1 times 10 to 16 GeV. There are further axions which come from a B field polarized within the compactification manifolds. So, in particular, if for each of the two cycles there is a harmonic, two cycles, let's say in a Calabi-Yau, there is a harmonic two form which is dual to it, and a flat B field can be expanded in it. And here the expansion coefficients are the axions. To reduce the supergravity action to the action for axion, we take the kinetic term for the B field, and reducing it, we get something like this. So it gives us the four-dimensional kinetic term, and the axion coupling of the axion to gauge field comes from the Green-Schwarz anomaly cancellation term, which has roughly the following form, where alpha and beta are some coefficients. So, since we know that in heterotic compactification, one has to turn on gauge bundle on the Calabi-Yau in order to to preserve a tadpole condition, then we can take two of the Fs from here and integrate them over Calabi-Yau, and we are left with a coupling of B to trace of F squared. Similarly with this term, and a similar term with the trace F squared times trace R squared. The coupling parameters of these axions depend on the compactification manifold. That's why it's called the model-dependent axion, and to fall somewhere in the range from about 10 to 15 or 16 to 10 to 18 GeV. In summary, the weakly coupled heterotic string theory has B2 plus 1 axions, where B2 is the second Betti number of the compactification manifold, all of which do not satisfy the cosmological bound that the axion coupling parameter should be less than 10 to 12 GeV. Let me note that before advent of string theory, it wasn't really clear how natural it is to solve the strong CP problem using Pechequin axion. After all, one is postulating some global symmetry, which is not really a symmetry because it's violated, and it's not clear that there are not more strong violation from some other terms. In string theory, for example, in this example, we naturally get a large number of axions, and as I'm just going to show you, the Pechequin symmetry is a pretty good symmetry for these axions. Indeed, it is valid to all orders in perturbation theory, since the coupling of the B field to strings is just the integral or the flux of the B field through the string wall sheet, which vanishes in the perturbation theory, because in perturbation theory, a wall sheet is a boundary of a string manifold. Non-perturbatively, the Pechequin symmetry of, let's say, the model-dependent axions is violated by wall sheet instantons, where which have a non-zero dependence on the axion, since the B field through a volt sheet, which will wrap a corresponding two cycle, will have a non-trivial contribution to the action or to the path integral. And the strength by which the Petchekin symmetry is violated is given roughly by minus exponential of the minus of the instanton's action, which calls like the area of the instanton. So in order for the Petchekin symmetry not to be too strongly violated by these other explicit effects, the area of this instanton should be larger. This gives actually a pretty strong constraint on the models, as I will discuss after I survey all the different models. The model independent axion has further violation of Petchekin symmetry because it couples to, for example, the hidden E8 gauge group and to also to the gravity instanton number. So gravitational instantons could violate Petchekin symmetry. So in summary, the conclusion in the early days was that there is a lot of axions in weakly coupled heterotic string theory, but it seemed like all of them are going to have a strong violation of Petchekin symmetry at the string scale from other effects like Walshid instantons and hidden gauge groups. So it wasn't clear whether any of them would solve the strong CP problem, because one of the requirements is that at least one of the axions has dominant contribution from QCD to Petchekin symmetry violation. So we could try the simplest thing of solving some of our problems, which is taking the previous models to strong coupling. What we get is a M-theory compactified on a Calabi manifold times an interval, and the metrofields are going to live on one of the E8 boundaries. Here, one has still the same classification of axions that has been discussed first by Banks and Dine. The model independent axion will come from dualizing most of the string form field in the M-theory, a supergravity action, which has two legs polarized along the four non-compact dimensions and one leg along the interval. And the B2 model dependent axions will come from a reduction of the C field of the following form, where omega q is again a two-form dual to two cycles in the Calabi-Yau's, and dx then is a one-form along the interval. What one finds is that it is possible to lower FA slightly by taking the length of the interval large. However, we are limited in how much we can lower the axion coupling parameter by making the interval large, because if we go some certain distance, we run into a strong coupling singularity on the hidden E8 boundary. So we are no longer have a control over our model. So it is not possible to lower axion coupling parameter this way significantly. This model helps a bit, however, in suppressing the explicit violation of Petchekin symmetry by instantons, since those are exponentially suppressed. So by making the action of the M2 brain instantons, which are now the strongly coupled analogs of the Walshid instantons, just a bit larger, we can suppress the violation of the Petchekin symmetry significantly. One way how one can find models, string theory compactification, which satisfy the cosmological bound, is by abandoning Gaussian unification and compactifying string theory on manifolds in which the QCD fields are supported on a vanishing cycle. So in this geometry, where you have a small cycle of the size of few string lengths or Planck lengths in the M-theory case, and the manifold itself is very large. In this geometry, the scale of the axion is going to scale differently with the size of the manifold than the Planck scale. So we can lower the axion coupling parameter relative to the Planck scale. So one way how you can see this intuitively is by remembering that the Planck scale, compared to its 10-dimensional or 11-dimensional analog, goes like the volume of the Calabi-Yau manifold. So if we want to lower the axion decay constant, we have to achieve that the wave function, the internal wave function of the axion, is going to have some non-trivial profile, which, for example, is achieved by having a small cycle with sort of a conical geometry over it. Or another possibility would be just to take a warp compactification, which is a famous example. But in all these examples, we had to lower the string scale, so these models aren't really unified. One example, easy example how we can do this, is to take the model from previous transparency of a heterotic N-theory and put the standard model not on the larger of the 2E8 boundaries, as people have been doing ever since the first paper, but on the smaller one, in which case we can take so we have a smaller boundary, which we take of the order of few Planck lengths. And as we go along the interval, the Calabi-Yau size is going to get larger. And this way, we can lower the axion scale as much as we want. But we will be also lowering the scale of the M-theory, so the model is not unified. Another possibility is to take, for example, an M-theory on a G2 manifold, where QCD fields are living on an AD singularity along a, well, if we were just interested in QCD fields, then we would just need an A2 singularity along a small associative 3-cycle Q in the G2 holonomy manifold. The axion comes from a harmonic three form, from a C field, which is A times a harmonic three form dual to the 3-cycle. Its coupling comes from a coupling which is at an AD singularity of this form. One can derive it, for example, by a duality to type 2A with D6 brains. And it leads to, if you plug in this into here, it leads to standard axionic coupling. The size of the 3-cycle is determined by the strength of QCD at the M-series scale to be a few 11-dimensional Planck units. Essentially, the volume of the 3-manifold is given by the inverse alpha QCD. So, it depends on what that is. Let's say it could be 20 L11 to the third power. And to get a low axion coupling parameter, as I described in previous transparency, one takes the Calabi-Yau manifold to be many Planck lengths, much larger than the cycle Q. Another example I'll just mention in passing is to take an intersecting D-brain model with a D-brain wrapping a Q cycle, which describes the QCD fields or the entire standard model. In this model, the axion comes from a mode of the RR Q form field, which is very similar to what I did in previous transparency, to gain some flat R field. Here, let me just mention is that this model does not work if we consider these three brains, because these three brains do not wrap a vanishing cycle, since they wrap just a point in the Calabi-Yau manifold. So it turns out that in this case, the scaling does not help, at least for untwisted axions. There are also models where one can achieve gut-like unified model with a small axion coupling parameter if there are some anomalous U1 gauge symmetries. These U1 gauge symmetries I seem to have a QCD anomaly, which is canceled by Green-Schwarz mechanism. The general mechanism was proposed by Stilbar in the context of SO32 heterotic string theory, right after in 85 or 4. And it goes as follows. If this anomalous E1 gauge symmetry is not broken, but instead its gauge boson, it's a would-be axion and gets Higgs, then one is left with a global U1 symmetry below the string scale. Now, if this symmetry is spontaneously broken at a lower scale, one will get an axion with a lower value of axion coupling parameter. So you can imagine that you have a global symmetry and a charge field under it, which gets an expectation value. Then the phase of this charge field is going to be the axion. It's going to have a coupling to the QCD instanton density because this U1 symmetry is anomalous under QCD. So one example how one can embed this general mechanism into a grand unified model is to take a compactification of E8 cos E8 heterotic string theory with a polystable gauge bundle. In this case, the low energy gauge group often contains anomalous U1s, and the axion could, for example, come from a mode of the EH gauge field whose valve will break the U1. Of course, a lot remains to be done to show that this model actually would work. In particular, one would have to understand much better just how this mode of the EH gauge field would get such a small valve of 10 to 12 GeV. That's not clear to us. But in principle, maybe it could be done. Also, for this model to work, the explicit breaking of the U1 global symmetry by other effects, like, for example, Wolchian instantons, must be subdominant. So as I have alluded to before several times, Petrikin symmetries are often violated by other effects besides QCD, like gauge instantons of hidden gauge groups, gravitational instantons, Wolchian instantons, deep brain instantons, membrane instantons. And the strong CP problem will get solved only if the QCD effects are dominant by at least a factor of 10 to 10 for one axions than these other effects. If that was not the case, then what would happen in general is roughly as this. Some generic instantons, which I named on the previous transparency, with action S, would generate a potential for the axion which of the following form. If M is the roughly the scale of the at which the instanton physics happens, then this potential is like M to the fourth times the suppression due to the instanton action, times some term where phi is a most likely an order one phase mismatch between the instantons and QCD instantons. So in particular, this potential has a minimum at A equals minus phi, which generally, for generally instantons one would expect is away from the minimum at A equals zero, which is the CP conserving value of the axion field. So this potential has to be much smaller than a similar potential from QCD instantons so that it won't shift the minimum of the axion too much away from theta equals zero. And a simple estimate gives that the action of the instantons should be greater than about 200 in order to suppress this additional axion potential sufficiently. This is a strong constraint for many models. In particular, if you consider the weakly coupled heterotic string theory models, there you would expect that most of the Wolchian instantons have actions which is of the order of few, which is certainly not big enough. So this is the one place where low-scale SUSY might help in solving strong CP problem, because if we are in a supersymmetric case, then one would expect some suppression of the instanton-generated potential to axions. roughly we can estimate it as follows. In supersymmetric case, the instantons will generate instead a superpotential term, which is roughly of this form. And this will lead to a potential. Well, if we just substitute this into here, the dependence on the axion, which is like, you imagine her extra term, which was like plus IA, where A is the axion field, would drop out when we multiply W with its complex conjugate. So one can get a contribution. In order to get a contribution to the potential, one has to consider some interference terms, either between two instanton effects, or more likely in this case, between a one instanton effect and a Susi breaking term, whose value would be roughly like m Susi squared, where m Susi is the scale of supersymmetry breaking. This sort of interference term would lead to a potential of the following size times the similar periodic factor, like here. So even a few orders of magnitude lower Susi scale than the intrinsic scale of the problem can lead to a relaxation of the bound on the instanton action. There is a further suppression sometimes when there are extra fermion zero modes on the instantons beyond those required by supersymmetry. In that case, the instantons, instead of contributing to superpotential, will contribute to higher chiral operators, and their contribution to the potential is further suppressed. I'm just trying to give a very simple.
My question is, oversimplifying the number of terms that
can't hold. So you well, in a generic situation, one might expect that the axion with its lowest action will give the dominant contribution, and unless you have two axions with an action which is very close to each other, you would not expect generally to have. Yes. So here I have. Yes. That's before breaking supersymmetry. So what here I was giving a general estimate where you can think of having supersymmetry broken at a high scale. This is an estimate when supersymmetry is broken at a low scale. If supersymmetry is not broken, as you point out, for example, in the ZO2 models, all the different instanton contributions cancel.
And what about interference of a one instanton and two instanton terms?
That will have a size which goes like e to minus sum of the actions of the instantons. So you'd expect it's suppressed compared to the term where you just take the instanton which contributes, which has the smallest action. You know, I'm.
So what kind of bound on S can we get that doesn't contribute to
that? Then what you would get roughly is that the sum of the actions of the two instantons should be greater than about 200. Yes, it might be that all the other moduli are stabilized at a much higher scale. Yes, this is a bound going in the other direction. I already mentioned the other proposals for evading the bound. And let me now discuss a bit how people try to search for axions they use various couplings to matter, of axion to matter. The Petrekin symmetry allows axion to have some arbitrary derivative couplings to quarks and leptons, and then there are also further couplings which axion could have to which are analogous to the coupling of A times trace FHF of axion to QCD instanton density. In particular, axion can couple to two photons. So here, instead of the field strands of QCD, one puts the field strand of electromagnetism. This coupling is actually the basis of essentially all searches for axion. It is not really implied by the similar coupling of axion to QCD instanton density, which was necessary for solving the strong CP problem. However, it is present in most models, and one has to be clever in order to find a model in which it's not present. So for example, in SU5 unified models, there is a precise prediction for the value of this coupling, which was firstly discussed by Sedinsky and Kaplan. And in heterotic string theory, this coupling depends on the level of the gauge fields. So in the usual standard embedding, where all the levels are equal to 1, one gets actually the same prediction as for an SU5 gut unified model. There is a number of different experiments, and at the moment, none of them have found axions, and they are slowly coming towards the so-called axion window from 10 to 9 to 10 to 12 GeV, which is the range which was preferred by both the astrophysical and cosmological arguments. However, as we have seen, in string theory, there is a large class of compactifications, many of which are liked by many string theories, where the value of the axion coupling parameter is predicted about the range of the standard axion window from 10 to 9 to 10 to 12 GeV. So it would be very exciting if we were able to find it somewhere in this extended range from 10 to 9 to 10 to 18 GeV, which would also include the range of axion coupling predicted by most string theory models. And this could clarify the situation of what the value of axion coupling parameter really is. Well, it very much depends on how you make the standard model in your deep brain constructions. So if the QCD comes from a different brains than a QED, then it could be that the coupling has a different value. It could be still there. And
yes.
Yes. Well, it could be. Well, the point is that you would expect that most axions.
Throughout your talk, you're always writing 1A. And all my questions are repeating
myself
again.
Well, it's not as bad as you're right, it's not obvious, but most of these brain things you get the UN hypertrop from some combination of the UN, which includes the QCD.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some coupling.
But it won't be a different way of
a couple of NASA things that doesn't really matter.
Well, in any case.
In three generic cases, either there are no light fields, in which case you can forget the whole thing. There's one light field, in which case everything he says is fine, or there's more than one light field, in which case only one linear combination of them gets the QCD effect. The other one, if it hasn't already been given a larger mass by other effects, which we are assuming by my case division, it's got to be even lighter, and then has even stronger constraints on its use.
Yeah. In particular, the generic estimates for the masses of axions are much larger than the masses. So an axion with a decay constant of 10 to 16, which gets mass only from QCD, has mass 10 to minus 10 eV, which is a very minuscule. So, generally, one would assume that almost all axions have higher mass. So there are only few which survive at low energy.
The hard part is to get even one to survive.
Yeah.
You're worried about two or more surviving. Yeah. That's not the hard part.
I've done some experiments in Japan and the types of elsewhere where the way you search the upper part of this standard window more than 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 12 to the
Well, I read some recent review article by Sikiri, where he drew a diagram and of the different windows or regions which were excluded by experiments, and then there was a band of the standard axion window from 10 to 9 to 10 to 12 GeV, and none of the experiments have reached yet that window. There is an experiment called CASP at CERN, where they try to detect axions from Sun, and the next generation of this experiment is assumed to be able to probe the axion window. So maybe you have some other experiments I haven't heard of. Yeah. But as far as I understand, from the incomplete information I have about experimental status, is that they are just reaching the region where axions are preferred. Coming back to Greg's point about many axions, there has been actually a recent paper where they tried to make use of it. Authors Dimopoulos, Kashu, and collaborators, they try to build a model of inflation with many axions. So in that model, they explain why inflation had many was able to have several flow rolls. Well, those were heavy axions. Yeah. But so. That's a possible application of having many heavy axions. Having several light axions might be useful for solving quintessence, on the other hand. Because for quintessence, one is three flow rolls. And if you just have one axion, then with the parameters you find from a string theory for axions, you find that you would have to fine-tune the model in order to have a viable a quintessence candidate from axion. So having several light axions of about the same mass would help in this direction.
Yes, whatever scale might be in the standard one that comes to mind is the intermediate scale of supergravity.
This is.
Just out of curiosity, if you want to solve strong CP problems using anthropic arguments, what goes wrong if people push these a lot? I mean, what is there something on structure formation or atoms?
So, curious. The argument essentially, if theta QCD, or if the strong CP problem is solved using an axion, and the axion misalignment angle is too large, then you would have too much dark density, dark matter density. So, and then people have studied what happens to the structure formation when there is considerably more dark matter density than the current ratio, which is 5 times the baryon. Oh, there is nothing wrong, because then all the theta. Well, if you are at the non-zero value of theta, all that you will do is like have some small extra vacuum energy, which we don't understand anyway. Yes, which would be at a very small value, but I'm not aware of how it would affect the biology and chemistry. That's an interesting question. I'm not sure whether it was discussed in the literature.
There's still no good reason for the axion potential not to get large values of epsilon. So it seems like over most of the landscape, there's no light axion, and beta QCD is pi, but it's order one. This is still a striking problem. And you have to understand. Have you tried to make Nelson bar models?
They have not yet been embedded into string construction, but it could be, because after all, we can construct string compactifications which at the high energy conserve CP. So there remains to be done a bit of work because essentially the models work that there is some spontaneous CP violation which is small and is specific in such a way that it only gives complex phases to the CKM matrix, but it does not change theta from zero. There is no explicit model.
I think on general grounds, one expects the vast majority of the landscape to play CP, more or less from the start.
Although the Z2 seems to be supposed to be a little bit more easy. I don't know.